This is Studio 395, a production of the Department of History at James Madison University, and its Historical Research Methods course, History 395. I'm Drew Holt, a junior history major, and today we will be talking about the events leading into October 1962 that led the United States to its closest encounter of thermonuclear war. I'm speaking today with Roland Buffington, a history major at James Madison University and the author of the paper, The Decision That Saved the World, JFK and the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Alrighty, thank you, Drew. Go ahead and start with the first question.
Alright, why were the United States and the Soviet Union at odds?
So really, during the Second World War, the two powers were allied to defeat the Nazis. That was the only thing that they both had in common, really. I mentioned in my paper that was the underlying... It was this underlying compatible objective that they had, but there were two incompatible systems. This was because the U.S. was the capitalistic power, you know, as opposed to the Soviets, who were the communistic power.
Awesome.
And then this eventually led to the Soviets wanting to gain the upper hand in the balance of power globally. And the Soviets saw Cuba as an opportunity to either protect a communist country or gain a foothold in America's backyard.
Wow, that's awesome. So, after the missiles were placed in Cuba by the Soviets, JFK created the XCOM. What was the purpose of the XCOM during this crisis?
Yeah, so JFK basically created XCOM as a crisis management vessel. That's, you know, normally how I would see it. The XCOM provided JFK with outlooks and suggestions, as well as it was really essentially a vetting process for him with suggestions that he had or, you know, ideas that he would come up with. He would ask the XCOM, and they would bounce ideas around. And not only this, but it was the decision-making entity as well. There were always separate opinions within the group, and this kind of forced the members to, you know, constantly be bouncing ideas around and always cultivating these new ideas and new approaches to find the solution to conquer the problem.
Following that, what were the four main courses of action presented to JFK?
Yeah, okay. So they call them track A through D. The first one, track A, was political action with a military strike, following if satisfaction was not received with the political action. Track B was a military strike without warning, which is, you know, pretty out there. Track C was political action followed by a total naval blockade, and you'll see why that one's the most important. And then we have track D, which is the last one. And so lastly, they called it the Take Cuba Away from Castro option, which was basically a full-scale invasion. So the political actions included letters and such to Castro and Khrushchev, you know, as precautionary, whereas the military actions included airstrikes on missile complexes or, you know, like I had mentioned, a full-blown commando raid against Cuba, with backing from the Air Force and airstrikes, which, you know, is pretty crazy if you really think about that. Mm-hmm. And I'll cover that, you know, in a little bit later, but, you know.
So of those four proposals, what was JFK's choice and, like, response to those?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously it's pretty well known in history, but JFK chose to blockade Cuba. Or I guess I should say quarantine. They chose the word quarantine because it wasn't as... I believe that when you set a blockade, that actually meant you needed to declare war, but a quarantine was a little less distinct and clear. And he really chose this because the military actions presented too many potential lives lost of Cubans and Russians. And really, perhaps the biggest issue was that they weren't even 100% sure that they could destroy all the missiles. Like, they were 90 to 95% sure, but there was still that 5% that, you know, if they couldn't do that, what happens when they've killed hundreds of Cubans or Russians and there are still operational missiles intact?
Wow.
You know, there you go.
Yeah.
They're going to have that would elicit a pretty strong response.
That's very, very
if
true.
If you kill hundreds of either innocent or, you know, Soviet Cuban lives, and then what kind of response, what kind of, you know, repercussions would you get from that?
So who within the XCOM after JFK made his choice exhibited the strongest opposition to the blockade?
So I would say the Joint Chief of Staff. I mean, really the whole time, no matter what these guys were doing, the JCS was constantly pushing the hard line. And then even when it was almost certain that Kennedy's decision was still was made, the JCS still pushed for military action, and immediately too. No matter what, someone would bring up a point, the JCS would counter with, oh, no, we need an airstrike. We need a full-scale invasion. We need to do this. And, you know, President Kennedy was also aware that they had trust issues with himself and his brother for one reason or the other. I didn't cover that in my paper because I didn't think it was, you know, integral part. But, you know, Jeff Hill, he was always willing to listen to the JCS, but always ready to combat them as well and, you know, show why military action was the wrong route to take. You know, albeit the JCS still didn't believe that.
Absolutely. So after this whole series of events, what do you think was the major outcome, and how did this display Kennedy's strength in his decision-making?
Yeah, so the outcome was that Khrushchev and the Soviets agreed, obviously, to remove their missiles in response to the U.S. blockade, quarantine, and to Kennedy's, you know, response. This really displayed Kennedy's strength because during this time, Kennedy was in constant communication with Khrushchev through letters, you know, or Soviet officials or some other medium. and then he was able to project his strength through these mediums and present. He really presented the bigger picture to Khrushchev and was able to persuade him on why what he was doing, what Khrushchev and the Soviets were doing, as well as Castro and the Cubans, what they were doing could possibly be detrimental to the world, not only to, you know, a few superpowers. And Kennedy also was constantly opposed by members within the XCOM, and even outside it as well. But he stood to the challenge, and he really patiently executed the right decision that had the highest chance of preserving peace between the two superpowers, but also withholding the Americans' integrity and pride, because that was one of the biggest things. It was, you know, the American Cold War ideology throughout the whole, you know, time period of the Cold War. They wanted to make sure that they were seen as the stronger, you know, opponent. But not only that, JFK was also aware that compromises needed to be made. So he secretly made a deal with the Soviets and Khrushchev to remove U.S. missiles in Turkey, because Khrushchev had mentioned that, you know, that was a concern for him. And that was really to alleviate the pressure on the Soviets and ultimately to facilitate an easier decision for Khrushchev. You know, and that's really how the 13 days of October ended. Wow. Between the Soviets and the United States.
Well, thank you, Rowan. I feel much more knowledgeable on that area of,
glad I was here.
of information. Thank you for listening to Studio 395. More interviews on a wide range of historical topics and subscriptions to our podcast are available on our show page at sites.jmu.edu/studio395. To learn about the history major at James Madison University, please visit www.jmu.edu.